Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Random Chatter. This is episode number 107, recorded Thursday, April 21st, 2016. I'm Eric, and I'm joined by Lou. Lou, how you doing?
I am doing well.
Yeah, I know why you're doing well.
You do?
I do. It's because Hardcore Henry, in its second week on my movie draft list, has completely fallen off of the top 10 at the box office.
I could have called that.
Hush. It's not my fault.
It's not that bad.
Yeah,
it's not that good either.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we're going to do the movie draft a little bit differently next time. You know, it's one of these things. We knew it was going to be an experiment.
Yeah. But somebody asked in our Slack channel today, you know, maybe this is like a beta version of our, and I said, no, this is the inaugural movie draft, because I'm still going to kick ass. I'm still going to win this one.
Yeah. It's official, because you're going to win, but it's definitely a version 1.0. We had, not because of Hardcore Henry, but,
we've had a bunch that have been straight to video, yeah, or, you know, very limited release, as opposed to what we thought was a wide release. Yeah.
Yeah. Specifically, Get a Job, Identicals, Pandemic, Mr. Right, and Paradox look like they're all going to be either really limited, day and date, or straight to DVD. Now, fortunately, everything from here on out looks like it's going to be full releases. And yeah, of these, let's see, Chris has two. I have one, you have one, and Nate has one. So Chris is really the one who's got hurt the most by this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But,
sorry, Chris.
Yeah. So overall, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, $312 million.
Yep.
And that's about all that's going to make at this point. I mean, it's down to $9 million at the box office this week. So that's, you know, it's going to taper off here.
Yeah. Pretty quick.
I bid way too high for it. 42. So it's about 7,500 per credit. What else here? Jungle Book.
No, you mean 7 million per credit.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
About 7,500 per credit. Jungle Book, in its first weekend, is 119 million. Nate bid 17 for that. He got it for a steal.
You got a bargain on that one. Yes, yeah, he did.
He's already at 7 million per credit, and that's just opening. Not opening week, but opening weekend.
Yeah. That will do well for him.
Yeah. So The Boss, Nate also has that. He got about $4 million of credit on that. It's at 41. And then everything else is kind of petered out.
Everything else is not done real well. I mean, you got Hardcore Henry, that's about $8.5 million.
Yeah.
I have Demolition, which was very narrow release at 1.9 million.
Yeah.
Ouch. You know, it didn't do real well, but yeah, hey, I only spent 3 credits on it, so
that's true.
Bad. So what else do we have? Oh, yeah, Green Room for me. That was the $87,000. Yeah, I was like, yes, awesome.
But again, I think it
looks really good.
And you didn't spend much on it. I mean,
no, yeah, I haven't spent a lot. Now, coming up this weekend, a lot of movies this weekend getting released for our draft. Huntsman, Winter's War is coming out, and it's got a really low rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but that'll probably do pretty well.
Well, though, and that's what this game is all about.
Exactly. Elvis versus Nixon. Dawn of Justice, Elvis versus Nixon. Elvis and Nixon's coming out. Yep. The Meddler's coming out this week. Precious Cargo, Nina, Ratchet and Clank. Ratchet Clank is next week. But, you know, a lot of movies. So we're starting to get ramped up here and more movies coming out. So it's getting a little more interesting here.
Yeah.
I am still waiting for
Captain America Civil War. I know.
Next month, Captain America, Neighbors 2.
One of the biggest changes of the next movie draft is when we were selecting these movies, we did them randomly. And Captain America Civil War, I think, was our second film that was picked. And nobody had done this before. None of us. And so we didn't really know. We had 100 credits, and there are a lot of big movies on here. I mean, Batman versus Superman. This is back before we knew what the critical acclaim was going to be like. The Jungle Book may or may not have been big back when we did this. Captain America Civil War, X-Men Apocalypse, Finding Dory, Independence Day. I mean, those are the big ones. And then there are a lot of a lot of these that could end up being big, like Neighbors 2, the Angry Birds movie, Alice in Wonderland, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now You See Me 2 actually looks really good. I wish I had bid on that. It was taken for only $9 million. The Warcraft movie. There are a lot with potential on here, too. So 32 at the time. 32 for Captain America Civil War seemed really high. We're like, oh, man, I don't think I want it. That's the third of my money right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one to come up.
And that is a bit risky. I mean, $32 is a lot of money in our $100 draft. I mean, so is 42 for Batman and Superman. But, you know, those movies are expected to do a lot. I felt pretty good about 32. I feel much better about, you know, 20 for X-Men Apocalypse. I think that'll do well for $20. Angry Birds movie at 21, that may be a bit high.
I'm going to say this. I think that you will make more, this is my prediction, you will make more per credit from Civil War than you will X-Men Apocalypse.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
I could be wrong, but, and it may be close. But 32 for Civil War, 20 for X-Men Apocalypse. I still think Civil War is going to bring in a much, much higher amount at the box office than X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. I think it will, too. Definitely, yeah.
All the fanboys are excited about Captain America. About half of the fanboys are excited about X-Men Apocalypse.
Yep. Yep. But I think some of the other ones out here, I think that, sorry, I just moved my sheet here. You know, Finding Dory for 33, that was a little risky.
I don't know. I think that was a steal.
You think so at 33? I don't know.
Yeah, my biggest regrets on this list are Civil War and Finding Dory. And I seriously think of all of these, Finding Dory is probably going to be the number one box office draw.
Out of everything on our list.
Finding Nemo was one of Pixar's biggest films. The only other kids movie at the time is going to be TMNT. Okay. And Finding Dory is going to be it's going to have a little bit of a different audience. And it's the beginning of summer. The kids will be out of school by then. All of the kids. I mean, Angry Birds is going to do really well too. But yeah, I think Finding Dory, Mike didn't spend a lot, but I think Mike was smart to make sure that he had whatever it was going to take him to get Finding Dory.
Well, now Finding Nemo only did $380 million.
And it came out when?
Good question. May 30th, 2003.
Okay, so that's 15 years ago, just about. Not quite.
Yeah.
13 years ago. Box office results overall, look at 2003 versus, 10 years later, 2013. Look at 2015, which was one of the biggest years in history. And we've got a lot of stuff this year. So, and this is, here's the thing. This is just the spring. This isn't even the summer box office. There are a lot of.
But now, I'm looking at other, animated movies. I'm looking at Minions, for example, come out in 2015. That's domestic gross was $336 million.
But that's not bad. I mean, so Batman and Superman is going to peter out at $320 million.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Finding Dory being the most highest rated out of all of our list here. I don't know.
The only thing that might beat it is Civil War. Civil War has a solid chance of beating it, and it might be a shoo-in to beat. You know, Civil War has gotten such high praise, and it's so anticipated.
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to do it.
But because it's basically, the battle of the two teams. It's basically Batman versus Superman, but it's a team versus a team. So I think that it very well could beat Finding Dory, but it's going to be between those two. Nothing else here can come close to Finding Dory.
I didn't think Finding Dory was going to be that high. Maybe it will.
I think it will.
Okay.
We'll see.
We shall see.
It's going to depend a lot on last minute marketing and on word of mouth. As long as it doesn't suck, I think it's going to be solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know I've talked to a lot of people who are looking forward to seeing it, who plan to be taking their kids to it.
Right.
It's people are already talking about it. And so far, marketing is just beginning on that. So
it should be good. We will see.
Well, that's our movie draft update.
Now, how are we doing by team here?
All right. Well, let me, if you go to randomchatter.com/moviedraft, there's a spreadsheet here, and down at the bottom, there are different tabs, and you can look by movie, by team, or look at the bids. Right now, I'm winning, but not that that's not going to hold that long. I'm winning basically because of Batman versus Superman. Per credit, I'm at about $3 million. Nate is in second place at $167 million. His per credit is $1.8 million. But again, we're so far early on.
Oh, yeah.
That... yeah, I mean, we've got 3 months, and we're coming up on the first month so far.
Fun to track everything where you are. Yeah.
Yeah, but anybody who wants to check in on that, I update it at least weekly, and you can find that over at randomchatter.com/moviedraft.
Cool. Can't wait for my movies to come up.
Yeah, I can. All right. Well, what have you been up to recently?
I've been playing more Division.
Yeah,
I've been really trying to find time to play that more, but yeah, I finally got my first piece of moddable gear. All the weapons have mod slots on them, and you can get different, you know, suppressors or silencers, and you know, magazines and so forth for it in different sites. Uh-huh. But I've been finding you get repurposable mods to be able to put into your gear, your armor, your knee pads, gloves, whatever. But I haven't found any gear that's moddable, and finally found one this past weekend. So, found my first pair of body armor with a mod slot in it. It does help out your stats quite a bit, and that makes the game a whole lot easier to play. I find myself not dying as much.
Good. That's one thing I think I really need to work on is my armor at this point is just crap.
Yeah, I mean, like most games, you know, you and I talked about this before. I do like to get mods and do crafting and build my weapons better, you know, than they were before, and get different gear. That's half the fun of playing these kind of games, because you can get different stuff. And I haven't found any skins for them. Supposedly you can get skins for the weapons and stuff too. But I'm just happy with you know, upgrade my gear and do some more damage and take out some more bad guys and. I'm happy there's no more, at least in the area of the city I'm in now, there's no more cleaners. Those guys with the flamethrowers are tough.
Yeah, I'm still early enough on that I'm dealing with the guys with the baseball bats. I know I've got a lot of catching up to do.
We
got to
get you going. I'll kind of walk you through some stuff.
I've had a bit busy a couple of weeks, but
I know.
I'm at the point now where I think I can finally do it.
Sweet.
So...
Yeah. Other than that, just tonight, I watched the first episode of Contagion. That's on CW, maybe?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's on CW because I saw an ad for it when I was watching Arrow. Pretty good show. Only one episode out so far. It's basically, it's a limited series, so it's not a big investment of time, which I'm happy about.
Good.
Yeah, it's a... flu-like virus gets released somehow in the Atlanta area, and they've set up a quarantine zone in the city and put up an electrified fence and everything else right in the city, and, you know, dividing up the neighborhood and dividing up who's where. And it looks pretty good. Scary stuff, but pretty good.
Cool. I probably should check that out. Of course, I'm still catching up on all kinds of stuff.
I'm catching up on everything, but I figured limited series, I can do that.
Well, that's true. That does help. So,
what about you?
Well, I've been catching up on Jessica Jones.
Okay.
And Supergirl. I discovered a wonderful thing about the Supergirl show.
What's that?
My son is 7 years old. And he's at that age that all seven-year-old boys come to. And I imagine girls probably do the same thing. But he is, it's like he's personally offended that Supergirl is a girl and that she's the strongest, fastest person on the show. And so he won't watch it. So if I put Supergirl on, he will go downstairs and find something else to do. So, if I want to watch Arrow, Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Quantico, which is also really good, by the way, Anything else I want to watch that's not really appropriate for him, all I have to do is put on, you know, half an episode of Supergirl and he's out of there.
Nice.
And to be clear, I want to point this out. Both my wife and I are very proactive about explaining, you know, girls can be superheroes too. And, you know, first thing I do is I break out the old X-Men roster and, you know, I'm like, hey, Jean Grey and Psylocke. Well, yeah, but, you know, Superman is super strong and the Hulk is super strong. I'm like, yeah, Rogue's fought the Hulk before. Rogue's super strong. Well, yeah, but Superman can fly. Yeah, Rogue can fly too. And she can drain people's powers. Not only can she fly, if she touched Superman, Superman wouldn't be able to fly anymore and he wouldn't be super strong. Well, I'm going to make a comic and I'm going to have a boy Rogue and he's going to be faster. And I'm like, dude, let it go. Come on. So he's at that age. Yeah. But anyway, I digress. So Supergirl has been something I've been catching up on both because I kind of want to catch up on. I don't love the show, but it's like I want to get it off my DVR, and it's not bad. It's gotten better. But for all of the superhero shows out there, it's definitely the least of all of them, I think.
Yeah, I'm at the point now where I'm still watching it, but it's almost like a chore to watch it.
Yeah. Like if it went off the air, it'd be like, eh, okay. You know, I wouldn't lose sleep over it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Identicals, one of the movies that was on my movie draft. I thought, well, you know, I bought it on my movie draft. I might as well. And it went straight to DVD. I might as well see how it is.
And how was it?
Bad.
Oh. I wanted to see that,
not,
too.
Not bad. Let me rephrase that. It wasn't bad. It was, I found it annoyingly artsy. I liked the premise and the concept, and I wanted to see them do more with it. And instead, they turned it into an art film. And there's nothing wrong with art films. That's fine. But it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted more. I wanted any story. And it's not even that it was confusing. I can see where a lot of people would find it confusing. I get it. I get what they were trying to do. I get the message. I get the point. I just don't care about the message, and I don't care about the point because the characters were never developed well enough for me to really care that much about any of them. Like, you really care about the characters early on in the film, and then the conceit happens and you go with it and you still kind of care about him, but it's like, okay, he's spending a lot of time moping. Whoever the director was probably should have moved things along a little bit faster. So then things finally look like they're picking up and you're like, wait a minute, what? So now we're doing this? And then it's like you care less and less about what happens. And by the end of the film, you're just like, okay, fine. Yep, it's over. Okay. Good riddance. Moving on. So without getting into any spoilers, that's kind of what I felt about it.
Okay.
You saw something recently, didn't you? Oh, Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you think of Snowpiercer?
It was so good, I forgot about it.
That good, huh?
I had it on my iTunes for a while.
Yep.
And I hadn't had a chance to watch it, and I was heading down to a Yankee game on the train over the weekend. So I was like, you know what, I'll put it on my iPhone, and I'll watch it on the way down and, you know, check it out. And I got into the movie a little bit, and I was watching it, and I paused the movie and went to the internet to see, was this really the movie that people were raving about that I wanted to see? It had good reviews, and sure enough, it had a 95% in Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm watching the right movie, because it didn't really work for me. I mean, the concept, you know, like you and I talk, we both like post-apocalyptic movies and in that atmosphere, and this has got all the right, you know, things in it, but wow, it just seemed like the premise was really bad. You know, the whole thing of they're trying to combat global warming. They release a chemical in the atmosphere supposed to help cool the planet off. And it does to basically an ice age.
Ah, is that what's going on?
Yeah, it kills off the population of the Earth. And then this guy built a train track that goes around the world and wanted to connect all the train systems of the world together. And he built this train that he put people onto, and that's where everybody lives. The entire what's left of the population of the Earth.
Okay. That part I knew.
On this train that circles the globe once a year. Yeah, I'm just going, wow. That you buy into that premise and maybe okay, maybe the movie's good for you, but it just didn't worry. It was too far fetched. It was too much. I mean, granted, there was some symbolism in the movie. There's a class warfare thing going on, and you know, not taking the rest of it too seriously. I think that played out and it worked for the movie. But overall, I got done with the movie and I'm just kind of going, well, yeah, I guess it was a movie, but. I was not enamored with it at any rate.
Well, that kind of stinks.
Yeah, I wanted to really like it.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, Chris Evans did a good job as the main, well, I guess protagonist you'd call him in the movie.
Hmm.
But
I still kind of want to see it.
Yeah, I would. I'd like you to see it so we can talk about it and see what you think.
Yeah. Okay. I also saw Jungle Book.
Okay, how was that?
It was really strange. I think I mentioned this very, very briefly at the end of Echo Base this week, but I wrote a review for it on randomchatter.com. I wrote it within like an hour or so of coming home from the theater, which is odd for me. Because I had a hard time with this movie because it's the first movie experience I think I've ever had where I walked out of the theater 100% ambivalent. Not that I thought that it wasn't a good film. It was, I walked out and I didn't care at all. Like I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I didn't even like it or dislike it. It was, I've never felt more perfectly, absolutely neutral.
Huh.
I was completely devoid of any emotional reaction to the movie, which is really weird, especially because I feel like it was so well crafted. Neil Sethi, the kid who plays Mowgli, in my personal opinion, Academy Award worthy. Job. It would not surprise me. Let me rephrase this. It will surprise me if he doesn't get a nomination. So that perfect. The voice acting. There were some complaints. I thought the voice acting was really good, though. Christopher Walken should never be allowed to sing again. other than that, I thought the voice acting was really good. I liked the characters. Scarlett Johansson as Ka the snake. I thought that was, uselessly underused. I mean, you see almost her entire scene in the trailer. So, other than that though, I thought the characters were great. I thought the story was a better, more interesting story than the, was it 1967, I think? The original Disney version?
Sounds right.
And there were various different Disney versions. Or not Disney versions. There were various different versions of The Jungle Book by different companies. Disney made two. But the original version, the songs were way better in the original. And the original was definitely more kid-friendly. But I like this version better, but I just, like I said, I felt completely emotionally devoid. Oh, and the CG. I think that this was some of the best CG work I've ever seen.
The CG work in the trailer looked amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. There were parts where some of the characters were talking where it was like, okay, well, yeah, that's obviously CG. So it wasn't flawless. But considering the entire film was nothing but green screen, the amount that they got right was astonishing. It was mind-blowing when you know about how the film was made to see how well they did.
I will probably see this on video, but I don't think I'm going to run out to the theater to see it.
Yeah, I guess a part of it is if you've seen, like, you know, I grew up with, when I was young, my dad is very conservative. And my parents split when I was about 12. So for the first 11 or 12 years of my life, I didn't have a lot of pop culture influence and music and movies and things like that, which is probably why I went overboard after that and have every song lyric from every 80s song memorized. But some movies was they were kind of like that too. And Disney films were some of the only movies I saw back then. And so I've seen Jungle Book quite a bit. But I guess now I've seen it so many times, I'm in my early 40s, seeing a different take on the same story. It's the same story. You know, there's nothing.
Yeah, right.
There's nothing new except the presentation of it. And I appreciate how good the presentation is, but it's still the same story. So, yeah. That's my review. It's really, really good. I just don't care.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Real quick before we move on, at the beginning of this week's episode of Outer Rim, which I believe was 47, I think. Anyway, it's the one that was released this past Friday. At the beginning of the episode, I mentioned that I was a little cranky about something. I finally was able to get you know, I'm a Boba Fett fan, and I'm also kind of a fan of mashups of different things. And there is a, I think it's Chinese, it's either Chinese or Japanese version. It's by a company called Kai, K-A-I.
Okay.
And it's the Star Wars Variant Play, Star Wars Variant Play Arts line. And they have, they're the ones that make, like, there's a samurai Boba Fett and a samurai Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen those. Those are pretty cool.
Well, they've also made some that are based kind of on the artwork of the Final Fantasy series. So they're, like, highly Japanimation-esque sort of stuff. It's hard to explain. But they have the most awesome, incredible looking Boba Fett I've ever seen. It was designed by Square Enix, the people who make Final Fantasy. And I've wanted this thing for so long. And the price finally came down on Amazon. I bought it. It was from a company in China because it is actually, I don't think it's easily for sale here in the States. I think it has to be ordered from overseas. It took about a month to get here. Finally showed up yesterday. The box was crushed.
Oh no.
Crushed. And I'm talking this thing, like, I was waiting for the price to come down from the $279 price point that it was at. Crushed. Now I open it up and it looks like the figure's okay. And it looks like the accessories are okay. There's one piece of the stand that's missing, which annoys me on top of everything else. But basically, they took the retail box and they put a single layer of dollar store bubble wrap around it. And then they put like the shipping paper, like the brown shipping paper around that. And that was it. Like, they didn't put it in a box or anything. If I were looking to get this, like, mint in box to keep and not open up, this would have been 100% worthless. Worthless. I mean, it looks like somebody ran over this with a car. Not literally. It looks like, okay, speaking literally, it looks like someone very heavy sat on it.
Man.
Yeah.
That is rough when you wait for something for so long and spend good money on it.
Yeah. And it's China, so obviously trying to get my money back or anything like that's going to be a nightmare, even going through Amazon.
I mean, it should be somebody you can call, right? I mean,
I filed a claim through Amazon, but I doubt it's going to end up getting anywhere. But, but if I can, I don't know, if I can get it, like, working and everything is okay in it, I'm going to keep it. I mean, I think it looks freaking incredible, but
very cool. Yeah.
So we have a topic to discuss this week, and it's Ubisoft and their handling of the Division players and the Division exploits. But something came up in Outer Rim this week. We were talking about the Doctor Who companion reveal that's coming this, I think it's this Saturday.
Yep, I think so.
So, you know, we haven't really talked about Doctor Who that much in a while. I thought maybe we could address that real quick. I wanted to get your take on that. What do you think? Like, what's your take on Doctor Who, the state of Doctor Who at the moment?
The state of Doctor Who. Well, I am probably about a season behind right now. I don't think I've watched much of this season at all currently. I'm up through, let's see, Peter Capaldi was a new Doctor. I've seen his first season, I guess it was. So, yeah, I guess I'm just this season I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
You know, I get that every time we change Doctors and Companions, I have that whole bit of, oh, you know, I really liked the last one.
Yeah.
And now I've got to warp to a whole new set of people all over again. It takes me about a half a season, but I do.
Yeah.
I really, really, really liked the last two, Rory and what was her name?
Amy Pond. Amy,
yes. Yep. I liked them as companions. I liked the storylines with them. I liked, you know, the Doctor then. It worked really, really well. I'm still not as warm to this new one as I am with them.
Okay.
You know, as far as the whole state of the show, I should say. When that change happened, it felt a little bit meh to me. But, I mean, I still enjoy Doctor Who. I was never a fan of the classic stuff, so this is my
either.
Only real interaction with Doctor Who is the current stuff. And I think every iteration got better up until we got to Peter Capaldi. I'm not sure. I think he's better than the last two we had.
Yeah.
Well, what about you?
Well, looking at the Doctors, and again, we're talking the current run of Doctor Who. So when we talk season one, we're talking the one with
Eccleston.
Yeah, yep. Christopher Eccleston. People say you always prefer the first Doctor that you watch. My first Doctor was, I saw the first episode with Matt Smith that also had Amy Pond. And I thought it was a really good introduction. I think it's a good starting point for people just based on how it was written. And you don't necessarily have to have a lot of backstory from that point, though it definitely helps. So I watched that. I think I watched the second episode, which also was really good and a very good standalone episode. And then I was kind of like, okay, this is something I'm interested in. So I went back and watched Christopher Eccleston, knowing that he was only in for one season, didn't care for him at all.
Okay.
I know for some people, that's their favorite Doctor. I didn't like him at all. Not one bit.
Yep.
David Tennant showed up his first episode. I'm like, who the heck is this nutcase? But about three episodes in, I really liked him. And so I watched all of his and I watched all of Matt Smith's. And I have to say that I was always convinced Matt Smith was going to be my favorite until I started getting near the end of the David Tennant episodes and realized that. And then even after watching all of the Matt Smith episodes, looking back, I think Matt Smith's Doctor was a little more fun and unexpected, like different moments with him. There's always this unexpected thing. David Tennant had so much more heart, I think.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. I never thought of it that way. Yeah, you're absolutely right. He did have more of a heart. He was more,
more compassionate, more sympathetic.
Yeah, I mean, compared to Matt Smith, who was, I used to think of him as like a child in the Doctor's body.
Yeah.
Because he had that wondrous, energy of a kid that was always excited by things and really did, but he was still really strong when he needed to be.
Yeah.
You know, you know, but my first doctor was Eccleston. I started when it came out. I had no idea what Doctor Who was. I had no knowledge really of much what the old series were. I enjoyed the first series with Christopher Eccleston. It was weird because some of the early episodes were kind of, you know, some weird aliens, some weird, you know, situations they were in. But right. I thought it was a good concept. And then when they switched up the next season, I was like, this is the thing, I guess. They do this. I'm like, this is going to be interesting to have a series where you keep changing up the main character. But I think Tennant was my favorite doctor of the two. And then when mm-hmm. I got to Matt Smith, he became my favorite. So I'm kind of like not the normal fan. I tend to like the next doctor and it just grows. Yeah. But when Peter Capaldi took over, I felt a little bit missing, you know?
Well, yeah, you said it normally takes you about a half season to really.
Mm.
Well, and you've seen the first half of the current season. Technically, I mean, the way they label it's kind of weird, but
right.
It feels more like it's its own individual season. But you've seen that. I share your feelings for it. I was not very impressed. This second half of that season. Or the following group of episodes you haven't caught up with, Peter Capaldi gets a lot better. The first episode of the season I hated, but after that he gets a lot better, and I'm starting to warm up to him as a doctor now.
Okay.
And I like Clara.
Oh, I love Clara.
So, yeah, but let me ask, I'll come back to that. So I like the current doctor and I like Clara, but I hate the episodes. I don't hate the episodes. The episodes make me long for the days of the episodes with Matt Smith's doctor and Amy and Rory. I think those were the best written episodes in the entire series. Mm. And I think that the episodes right now, I mean, I'm not really all that sad to see, Moffat leave the show, the current showrunner. The season you're caught up with, I thought was bland. The current season, I thought was an improvement, and I'm happy for that, but it's still nowhere near the Amy and Rory episodes. Nowhere near as good, in my opinion.
Right. So, I mean, that was a great story arc.
Yeah.
Even
the individual episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The Girl Who Waited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There were some really strong episodes with them, and they really carried that show, I think. Matt Smith did a great job, but they really did a lot of the heavy lifting to make this show work as well as it did.
Yeah, well, and especially Rory, who seemed like not only a throwaway character at first, but a character that was in the way as far as the storytelling. I'm like, okay, is he just going to be the bumbling oaf, and that's his role? I don't want to see that. Get him out of the way. Let me get back to the episode. And then... I mean, he really developed into a phenomenal character.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really thrilled about that. So what you were saying about how it kind of takes a while to get into a new a new doctor or a new companion. My concern is that it took so long to get into this doctor. And while I liked Clara right off the bat, it took me a while to get into the relationship between Clara and Capaldi's doctor. The way the episodes have been so bland recently, I feel like this next upcoming change is going to be even harder to go through because now I've seen how a change can have an adverse effect as opposed to before where the changes were difficult to go through, but each change was an improvement.
Okay. Yeah.
Now I have a question for you.
Okay.
Is it that you like Clara Oswald or you like Jenna Coleman?
Both.
Okay.
I mean, I like Clara Oswald. I think the character is fantastic. I like the way they brought her into this even before she was a companion.
Yes.
You know, that was a pretty cool concept that, you know, a souffle girl there. I thought that was awesome. Jenna Coleman. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't throw her out of bed for eating crackers.
Yeah. I wouldn't throw her out of bed for shooting me in the head with a gun. that being said, I enjoyed Amy Pond as a companion more. I I think her character was a better foil for the companion. For me, Clara, I like the fact that Clara is such a strong character, but it almost seems like, hell, just when Capaldi's off the show, do some kind of, you know, timey-wimey, wiggly-piggly thing and just make Clara the new doctor. I mean, she's basically doing half the doctor's work for him.
Right.
It feels like. Whereas the other companions weren't. They were more assistive, whereas Clara's almost like they're two peers. And I don't necessarily mind that, but I think that the writing hasn't kept up with that relationship. Like, the writing has not been at the same level as the characters have been. It's hard to describe.
Hmm. Yeah, I can't see where you're going with that.
I don't know. Looking back at the other companions, though, I didn't like Rose at first, but I became okay with her. I liked Mickey, okay. Martha Jones.
Yeah, I never really cared for her.
I didn't at first, but really quickly, I ended up liking her. Donna Noble is the one that I can't stand, and everybody loves her. And I will say this. I think that they did a great job of wrapping up her storyline as a character. I think it worked really well story-wise, and I appreciate it. Still can't stand the character. Like, if I met that woman in real life, I would stay so far away from her.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't stand her. And, of course, Amy and Rory are incredible. But, yeah, Donna, for me, is the one that it's really hard for me to go back and watch. Even the best of the Donna episodes.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry, because I think you said Martha Jones, and I always said, no, I didn't care for her. No, I did like Martha. It was Donna Noble I didn't care for.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking totally backwards, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little worried going forward, but I hope that whoever they get as the showrunner does a good job. And I'm worried because this is a hard show to do.
Yeah, and it's also a pretty good fan base that'll come all over you if you're not doing it well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean they're as rabid for this as, you know, Star Wars fans are for Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
If you don't treat this property well and don't do a good job with it, they're going to let you know.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to mess this one up. So,
Well,
we'll see.
Yeah, I got to catch up. I do like the show, but I had to put off watching. I mean, it was one of the things where it was like, yeah, I like the show, but I'm not as enamored with this new doctor as I would like to be. So it kind of took a backseat to some of the stuff.
Yeah, it's been difficult. Wow, we're at about 45 minutes.
Wow.
I guess we can talk real quick about this Division thing. We don't have to go into it too much at length. But so Division, like a lot of games, have had some exploits and or bugs, if you will. But the bugs and glitches allow players to take advantage of them in such a way as to get further ahead, either to make themselves invincible or to improve their weapons or to improve their funds within the game, whatever the result of the glitch or the bug may be. It's generally frowned upon, and developers don't like players taking advantage of that sort of thing. And over the years, there have been a lot of complaints about gamers cheating, and gamers have been banned from games as a result of cheating. But a lot of that goes back to the days of Counter-Strike, where people would have, you know, you're playing on a PC, and because you're on a computer and you can run things locally on your computer, you can run programs that will assist you in aiming sniper shots, or that will hack certain parts of the game in order to let you teleport across the map, things like that. So those are cheats. Those are hacks, and cheaters have gotten banned. But there's a controversy going on right now because I never can remember if it's Ubisoft or Ubisoft, but anyway, they are planning to ban Division players who exploit the different glitches and bugs in the game. And the most recent one, it was just announced after this whole debate kind of blew up, after Ubisoft announced this, there was a new bug that was found that, what was it? Makes players invincible, was it?
I thought it was giving you more DPS, wasn't it?
I don't know. I had it in the Outer Rim show notes, so let me pull that up real quick. Let's see. It was in the lightning round. Let me scroll down here. Unlimited damage.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So to higher DPS in the weapons. It was an exploit where if you had a certain weapon with a certain talent, you could actually switch back and forth between two weapons, like, you know, 100 times over a minute or so. It would stack that bonus.
Oh,
wow. Give you a huge DPS for a short period of time on a weapon.
Okay. So, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, which makes, you know, it's great for playing against NPCs, but I guess some players were taking this to the next level and going into the dark zone where it's, you know, player versus player.
Right.
And basically one shot anybody, which makes it, you know, fun. You know, it's like, ah.
Well, and one of the things about this game, normally when you play a game like this, as you progress, you collect what's referred to as loot. And you get improved equipment, improved armor or weapons or ammunition or modifications, whatever the case may be. In this game, when you go into this so-called dark zone, which is the player versus player area, when you get things, you have to basically evac that equipment out, and other players can steal it from you. So when you get other players that are overpowered or using exploits, basically it halts your progress in the game because no matter what you do and what cool stuff you get, you just get it taken away from you.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons why I have, like, I'm still interested in the game and I'm still going to go back to it, but I really doubt that I'm ever going to get into the multiplayer stuff or the player versus player stuff. So there's kind of a balance here. That one side of the argument is if you notice that something is stacking back and forth, for example, when you change weapons over and over again, you know that that's not the way the game was supposed to be set up. And you know that's an exploit, and you shouldn't do it. The flip side of the argument is that, A, if everybody else is doing it, and it's a competitive multiplayer game, you have to do that as well in order to be competitive, which is not an inaccurate statement. And some of the bugs and glitches don't always come across as bugs. Like, sometimes it's like, oh, you can do this in the game. Okay, I guess that's just a limitation of the game's programming, and it allows you to do this. And okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and do that then, because, I mean, it must be okay. That's what the developers coded the game to do. So not all of the bugs are obvious. And then finally, doesn't the blame reside with the developers? I mean, they made a game. They created the physics and the rules for this game and the way the game functions. And if you're able to do something in the game world that they created, they are the ones who created a game world that allows you to do that.
Right.
So I understand them wanting to fix it, but banning paying customers, you spend $60 for this game for your PlayStation and everybody else is using these exploits. You use them too in order to be able to play the game. I mean, otherwise you're going to get crushed and you're not going to want to play the game anymore. And all of a sudden, then they come along and they're like, oh, well, you used an exploit. You cannot play the game anymore. I mean, it's not like they're going to refund you that $60.
No.
So I understand the side of the argument that's like, well, you know, it's an exploit. But on the other hand, if that's the only way that you can survive in an area where everybody else is using the exploit or a significant number of players are using the exploit. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the question is here, just, you know, fix it. Don't ban us and penalize us for taking advantage of something we found that is in the game legitimately. It's not like we hacked it to get that, you know, exploit.
Right.
I mean, if you hack it, I can see, yeah, ban people, you know, get them out of the game.
Right, absolutely.
But if you're just taking advantage of what's given to you, I have a problem with that.
Right. Well, and that's the difference. Hacking is not what was given to you. Hacking is modifying what was given to you. Whereas a bug or a glitch, as you said, that's what's given to you. I mean, that's what they provide. If you go into a room in the game and there's a, I'm just going to, a Dungeons and Dragons style game, and you go into a room in a dungeon and there's a chest and you open it and there's some gold pieces and a weapon, and you leave and you run around the dungeon and you go back into that room again and the chest has reappeared and you open it again and there's more gold and another weapon. Mm-hmm. Come back 15 minutes later and there's a golden, you know, this time you got a legendary weapon. Oh, that's awesome. Etc. And you keep going back into this room. Well, you assume that the game developers made it so that that chest respawns. So when the game developers then come along and say, okay, you know what? We never meant it to do that. And we don't want it to do that. And so we're going to fix it. But because you've already been doing that, you're not allowed to play the game anymore. How is that the fault of the player?
It's not. No, it definitely isn't. I mean,
I feel like they're taking this mentality a little bit too far. So, and I am very much on the side of, you know, don't hack the game. Get rid of the people who are exploiting the game. But when your game is this full of bugs, I mean, what do you expect the people to do? And the problem is so many of these games are being released now with, you know, 0-day patches.
Right. You get the game, you put it in there, and you got, you know, an hour worth of downloads to just get the game to work for you for the first time.
Right. And it's...
it's almost like, you know, they set a date, they think they're going to make it, they get the date pushed, or they can't push the date, but their expected finish is pushed.
Right.
So they get something that's 97% of the way there, ship it, and then fix that last 3% in post. You know, it's...
what was your first video game system?
An Atari 2600.
Wow. Okay. And what other game systems have you had after that?
I think I started with, let's see, I had, I'd probably say PlayStation 1, 2, and 3, I guess, were the next ones after that.
Okay. Computers? You played computer games, I assume?
For yeah, years? Sort of games over the years, yep.
Okay. I didn't get the Atari 2600, but I did get a ColecoVision. All my friends had Ataris, but,
Yeah. I got a... and we all wanted the ColecoVision, but, you know.
ColecoVision was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was.
I ended up getting the Nintendo, the Super Nintendo, the Nintendo 64, PlayStation.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, I had the NES and Super NES. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I used to have an Apple. It was an Apple IIc computer. A lot of people don't remember those. It was a model comparable to an Apple IIe. I had a Commodore 64. And eventually, you know, I had... A Windows computer and did gaming for years and years and years. And it used to be you go down to your local software, et cetera, store or your Babbage's store or your electronics boutique.
Oh, Babbage's.
Yeah. And you'd buy a box and it would have right. Discs and an instruction manual and sometimes extra stuff like a map and, you know, little trinkets and things like that. And that was it. There were no patches.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you weren't connected at that point.
No, there was nothing. There were no patches at all. When you released the game, you had to get it right.
Yep. And if it was, you know, a cartridge game, yeah, no one's going to come out there and give you a new cartridge. It was right. That was the cartridge you had. That was the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the way for years and years and decades. And even the PlayStation 1 and the PlayStation 2. I mean, the PlayStation 2. Well, no, I don't think that really had patches either. It wasn't really till the PS3 and the Xbox 360 where they were.
I think my first connected game system was a PS3.
Yeah.
That was really, truly connected and downloaded patches. And, you know, now you got the store, PlayStation Store, you can download betas and, you know.
Right. But even computer games, there would be patches eventually. You know, we're talking the days of the PlayStation 2. That might not have gotten patches, really. But the computer games at that point, if there was a big glitch, there'd be a patch. But they weren't common. They weren't expected. So, I mean, it was almost like, you know, Apple doing a recall on something. So now it's so different. It's like you expect, like you said, you buy the, I bought a game the other day and I went and, well, I think when I got the Division, I went, I unpackaged it. I popped it in my PS4. I hit the button to start the download and I swapped to a different thing and watched a movie.
Right. Yeah. I was just saying, or you, I think I got home, put it in, went to bed.
Exactly.
I'm like, it's going to take hours to update.
And it just, that doesn't make any sense to me. And that's the first of many patches. This game hasn't been out that long. There shouldn't be this many patches, this many bugs, this many glitches. And if there are, the developers should take responsibility for it and not be like, oh, all you gamers, you're doing it wrong. We're going to punish you. Well, you know, if you made a product that didn't make it so easy for everybody to take advantage of in a competitive game.
Right. Right.
It's like, okay, the two of you, I want you to start at opposite ends of the room. Here's a baseball bat for each of you. And I want you to go beat the other one up. You, yeah, you have a 9mm pistol next to you, but don't use it. Just stick with the baseball bat.
Right.
and whoever lives is the winner and the other one's going to die. Well, no, you're going to pick up the 9mm and shoot the other guy because you don't want to be dead. It's a competitive game. If you have an edge, you're going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point can we just say enough is enough? Have these developers go back to, you know, make the game work before you release it. How hard is that?
Nice, but I think we're past that. I think we're at the day and age now where you're always going to have this patch mentality and you're not going to get a finished game on day one.
Well, I think it's ridiculous.
It's sad.
And the funny thing is, back in the day when we got the finished game, when you bought the finished game, the games were $30-$35. Each new generation of console system, it seems like they go up by another $10.
Right. And most games today are what, $60 for the game? And if you really want the game, it's $100 because you got to buy the season pass.
Yeah. Well, which is generally 50, so 50 and 60 is 110. Yeah. And that's not including if you want a collector's edition or anything else with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole other discussion. You know, is it really the finished game if there's day one DLC or month one DLC? I mean, I can understand coming out with extra content and that's nice, but that used to be a bonus. It wasn't like, I mean, these days it's like that's the second half of the game.
Yeah. It should be a little add-on, not the majority of it.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole different discussion that I think we could also go into, and that's pretty disappointing as well. But this whole thing about punishing gamers who are using exploits, I think maybe we need to also return to the days of quality assurance and testing actually being a little bit more thorough. I remember back in the day, if you were in a beta test for something, hell, you were a celebrity.
Right.
It's like, oh my gosh, you got into a beta test with who do you know?
And yeah, now half the games are open betas.
And some of them have open alphas. And it's crazy. And I think the open betas basically are just load balancing and that's it. And the players who are doing the beta testing, a lot of them don't report bugs. A lot of them, it's just that they want early access to the game. Everybody right. wants to be first.
And, you know, you would think with all this extra beta testing they have, they'd be able to put out a good, solid product.
You'd think.
And they're getting more testing now than they ever have.
Yeah. But again, I think a lot of that's just load balance testing.
Probably.
They need people to go through and try to break the games. And I think that they're not willing to invest the money in paying enough people to go and try to break these games. I think it's gotten too competitive where, you know, everybody's worried about cranking out the next Call of Duty or the next Tomb Raider or the next big franchise. And but I have to think, if you were a game company consistently putting out quality products, you'd make a name for yourself that you'd be so far ahead of all these other people. I have to imagine that that would still be a benefit. You'd still make your money back somehow.
You would think so.
No Man's Sky is coming out soon.
Yep. June, I think.
Yeah, you're excited for that? Yes?
I am, yep.
Okay, me too. I know a lot of other people are. It's an independent game. And my biggest fear is not, is the game going to be fun? Is the game going to be interesting? It's, is it going to work? And it shouldn't be. I shouldn't have to go and buy a product and wonder whether or not the product's going to function.
But, you know, it's funny. I probably have more faith in that with the independent developer than I do with big companies.
Well, because that independent developer knows that this is their moment. This is their make or break right. thing. With EA, they know 5 gazillion people are going to buy their game anyway. And if it doesn't work well, we'll just patch it. And then, you know, we've got another game coming out on the horizon anyway, so big deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, well. I mean, the world we live in, I suppose.
Well, it would not surprise me if there ends up being a lawsuit out of this. This thing with Ubisoft and Division. And if nothing else, I mean, it's not exactly instilling a lot of faith in Ubisoft.
Right.
Ubisoft, whichever. And, it, you know, the word of mouth, people are starting to sour on them as a company as a result, much like people soured on EA for a long time.
So, yeah, I mean, I still enjoy the game. I'm still playing it. I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually just did pony up and bought the season pass. So,
okay.
I guess I'm committed, but
I probably will too. Starting this weekend, I think I'll have some time to start playing again, but. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Well, I guess that's it for this episode. Oh, you know what else I have to do this weekend?
What's that?
I have been commissioned to write an article for FFG.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. My deadline is Monday.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. If you have any ideas, let me know.
I'll shoot them to you.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Random Chatter. I know we've got a lot of gamers out there, so, and probably Division players specifically. So what do you think about this? I'm not that far into the game. Lou, you're further into the game than I have. You've been to the Dead Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Zone. See, you even know what it's called.
It feels like a Dead Zone because I go in there and get killed.
But, you know, if this is something that's affected you, let us know. Or if this is something that you have a strong opinion on, tell us about it. We want to hear about this. This is kind of a big deal. This is going to be, in some ways, setting a precedent for other companies and how they're going to deal with things like this. So let us know what you think. Shoot us an email, randomchatter@randomchatter.com. We would love to hear your opinions on this. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can go to facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. Or you can go to twitter.com/randomchatter. You can also find Lou and I on Twitter. We're at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. And Lou, where can we find you?
Lou Secchi. That's LOUSECKI.
All right. And you can find all of the Random Chatter shows over at randomchatter.com. It's our headquarters for the entire Random Chatter Network. You can also find the shows in iTunes, on Stitcher, and very soon in the Google Play directory as well. They just opened that up for podcasting, and I've got that added to my list of things to do this week. So you can find us there pretty soon as well. Tell your friends about us. Leave reviews in the various podcast directories. We'd really appreciate it. Want to give a quick shout out to our Patreon donors. We really appreciate the support they've been giving us. Joel, Tim, Derek, Jeremy, Jared and Jared, Alex, Jeff, Joe, Blake, Joshua. I think I've got a few others I've got to add to the list there now, but we really appreciate the support. And it actually does help support us. This is not something where it's lining our pockets or something. This is what's helping keep the lights on, so to speak. So it really does mean a lot to us. And Patreon is a way that we can give something back to people. And we especially appreciate the people who have donated at the level where they can join the Slack channel Because not only has that been very successful for them based on their feedback, it's been a lot of fun for them. It's a lot of fun for us. We were just saying in the Outer Rim episode how it makes our work week go by a lot faster and more easily. So it's a lot of fun. We really enjoy hanging out with our listeners in the Slack community.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun for me, too. Yeah. Yep.
So if you want information on how to join the Slack community or just how to help support the network in general, head over to patreon.com/randomchatter. And that's it for this week. So on to the official closing credits. The music you hear in this podcast is The Perfect Heist by Blue Stolly. This podcast is copyright 2016 randomchatter.com. And as silly as the sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. So until next time, take care, everybody.
See ya.